IQ skill number 8, advanced presentation and communication skills. Great persuaders know how to educate, inspire, and entertain with passion, compassion, and purpose. As Daniel Webster said, quote, "If all my talents and powers were to be taken from me by some inscrutable providence, and I had my choice of keeping but one, I would ask to be allowed to keep the power speaking, for through it, I would recover all the rest." Unquote. Have you happened to notice the dramatic changes that have evolved in presentations, communications, and training in the last 20 years? The basic focus used to be on education. Now, the latest research is all about how to grab your audience's attention and then maintain their interest. We can no longer focus simply on educating. We must now entertain. We must keep our audiences mentally engaged. Research shows that people's attention spans are getting shorter and shorter. You don't have to be a stand-up comedian, but you do have to make sure your audience sticks with you. Your words resonate with them, they pay attention, and they understand you. The moment you lose their attention, you can no longer persuade them. You could have a great website, be a sharp dresser, publish a great brochure, or have any manner of impressive credentials. The reality, however, that the number one persuasion tool is you. And the big part of how you present yourself is through your communication. Long gone are the days of counting on the subject matter to speak compellingly for itself, compensating for your inadequacies as a presenter. Nowadays, you've got to get inside your prospect's mind, and you've got to get there fast. It can only take seconds before people's minds start to wander. To combat this tendency, you have to present with power and purpose. Great persuaders are great communicators. Jim Rohn said it best, "When I learned how to effectively persuade and communicate, my income went from 6 digits to 7 digits. Your communication skills are critical for your success, yet they are another set of overlooked skills that are not effectively taught in school. Communication includes phone skills, face-to-face interactions, group presentations, and email. The challenges that most persuaders feel incorrectly that they have above average communication skills. The research shows that 34% of persuaders feel they have mastered the ability to persuade and communicate. By talking to your audience, we know, however, that such mastery was rated at only 11%. We found that 15% of persuaders are so scared that they would rather do anything else than give a public presentation. Chalk another one up for the Wobegon effect. How are your communication skills? The Persuasion Institute went out and asked your audience, and the answer is that your communication skills stink. Sorry, again, no sugarcoating. They are in need of great improvement. Even though you might be in denial over the fact that they stink, great persuaders have never arrived with their communication skills. They work on their skills on a continual basis. There is always something to fine-tune and improve. The studies show that on average, a persuader communicates 6 to 8 features of his product or service to his audience. The average person will only remember one feature. In 48% of cases, the person will remember a feature incorrectly. In 39% of the cases, the person remembers a feature that was never even mentioned by the persuader. Ouch! We also found that 93% of persuadees misunderstood some part of the persuader's message. The worst part is that not one of them, that would be 0%, asked a question or tried to seek clarification. Remember, a confused mind says no. A confused mind has to think about it. A confused mind will get back to you later. A confused mind is hard to persuade and influence. What can you do in the first 30 seconds of your encounter to capture your audience's attention? Can you prove to them that you're worth listening to? Think about this. Every time you communicate with someone, they are either paying with their time or money. Your audience is rooting for you. They want you to succeed. They don't want their time or money wasted any more than you want to waste it. Then why is it getting wasted? Well, sometimes when you're approaching something new, figuring out what you should not do is just as important as figuring out what to do. Let's first take a look at some communication complaints. Speaking and monotone. Avoiding eye contact. Fidgeting and other annoying mannerisms. Using vocal fillers. You know the ones, you know, like. Lacking any emotion or conviction. Rushing through the presentation. talking down to the audience, not finding common ground, failing to help the audience see value in what you're saying, pressuring the audience, overloading the audience with too much information, being disorganized, jumping from one point to the next, not limiting interruptions and distractions, poor listening skills, saying the wrong things at the wrong moments, nervousness, fear, jumping to conclusions, constantly interrupting, pushing a predetermined one-sided solution, allowing personal emotions to get involved, being knowledgeable in an arrogant way. Now, I know that was quite the list. And the good news is most of these things are easily remedied once they're pointed out. We just don't realize how often we commit them. The most powerful teaching technique by far is to record yourself as you present or talk on the phone. Doing so will let you step into your audience's shoes and give you a true-to-life representation that's easy to evaluate. Plus, there won't be any second-guessing. The recording doesn't lie. Sure, it could be a painful exercise, but you will gain invaluable insights that cannot be found in any other way. Remember what they say, no pain, no gain. As Phyllis Mendel said, quote, given the choice of speaking in public or boiling in oil, most people would choose olive, unquote. Most of us have been faced with a bad case of lolliophobia at one point or another. What is lolliophobia? Well, it is the fear of public speaking. As common as this problem is, there is hope in knowing that most all of our fears are not innate. Remember? Born with two fears, fear of falling and fear of loud noises. So the fear of public speaking has been learned, and the good news is you can unlearn it. In the meantime, it is totally normal to feel some nervousness before you present. Understand this reality. Your audience really has no idea how nervous you are. Great persuaders still get a little nervous, but they take that nervousness and transfer it into energy. What do great persuaders do to channel or settle some of their nervous energy? Stretching exercises, soothing music, meditating, walking, breathing exercises, visualizing, rehearsing, or maybe just leave the country. I'm kidding on that one. As you improve this skill, it will rip you out of your comfort zone. There's some definite discomfort at first. After you gain more and more skill and confidence, however, it becomes more comfortable and the results begin to show. When you have mastered these results, you will see your persuasion skill skyrocket to the next level. Another thing you often have direct control over before your communication has even begun is the physical environment in which you will be presenting. You can choose where you are to speak or make adjustments to the facility that has been chosen by someone else. Speakers often overlook these details, even though they make an impact on how well a message is received. So what are the environmental factors that are easily adjusted? Lighting, ventilation, time of day, chair setup, knowing the number of attendees, monitoring the entrances and exits, audience expectations, and even knowing the distractions. As Napoleon Hill said, quote, think twice before you speak, because your words and influence will plant the seed of either success or failure in the mind of another, unquote. We've addressed the big communication complaints, so now it is time to look at the do's. What are the common factors in great presentations and great communication? Whether you're talking to someone one-on-one or over the phone or to a room full of people, great presentation should be complete. You should be able to anticipate questions and concerns. You should be able to avoid distracting mannerisms. Be clear and concise. Build a value. Inspire interest. Don't ramble and use vocal fillers. They need to know what the next step to take is. Do you have a call to action? Did you capture their attention? Did it flow well? You need to have visual aids. Be well organized. You don't want to be mechanical or memorized, and you do want to be filled with passion and enthusiasm. Another thing you have direct control over is the crafting of your message so that it will fit and resonate well with your audience. It is critical you make sure they know you are about to share something that is both meaningful and useful to them. In order to do this, you must clearly communicate the answers to your audience's three most pressing questions. Why should I care? How will this benefit me? Will this fulfill my needs? Your audience has to have a reason to want to listen to you, and providing them with the answers to these questions gives them one. This strategy naturally leads to the next set of questions. What are the needs and wants of this audience anyway? What do they want to hear about? How can I customize my message to them? Answering these questions, of course, means you must know and understand your audience. Obviously, any audience that contains many people is going to represent many different personality types. Try to get a feel for the general feeling and background that is coming from the group. What is the common theme that draws them all together? Monitoring great persuaders reveals that you must understand how to interact with different people and understand where they are coming from. Here are composites of the most common audience member types persuaders face. There's the hostile person. This person openly disagrees with you and may actively work against you. When faced with a hostile person, use these techniques. When faced with a hostile person, find something to agree on. Don't start the presentation with an attack on her position. Focus on your credibility. Show them that you've done your homework and respect their feelings, values, and beliefs. And if you run into an indifferent person, that is a person that understands your position but doesn't care about the outcome. The key is to create motivation and energy. In other words, be dynamic. So when you're persuading an indifferent person, spell out the benefits, or what's known as the what's in it for me. Use a combination of inspiration and desperation, like we talked about during the motivation section. Grab their attention by using stories. Get them to feel connected to your issues, and avoid complex, hard-to-understand arguments. Well, what if you run into an uninformed person? They don't have the information they need to be convinced. So to persuade the uninformed person, what you need to do is encourage questions. Keep the facts simple and straightforward. Keep your message interesting and maintain attention. Use examples and simple statistics. And quote experts the person respects. Then what you hope many times you'll have is a supportive person. They already agree with you. As a result, you may think that persuading this type of person will be easy. But remember that your goal is to get them to take action, not just to agree with you. So when dealing with a supportive person that's on the edge and they agree with you, you need to be able to increase your energy and enthusiasm with inspiration. Prepare them for future attacks by using inoculation. Get them to take action and to support your cause. Enhance your esteem and always use testimonials. When speaking to a larger audience, you will find a mix of all four: supportive, uninformed, indifferent, and hostile. Your goal is to find out the dominant type that you'll present to and tailor your remarks accordingly. And to shift gears just a little bit, you need to be able to support your message. When preparing your presentation, be sure you have several ways to support and enhance your message. Great persuaders use presentation aids that will clearly, concisely, and efficiently deliver your main points. Visual aids will enhance your presentation and help keep people's attention. But visual overload will distract. Find the balance between the two. When we think of visual aids, we envision the common ones like charts, graphs, pictures, or PowerPoint presentations. During your presentation, you can also use handouts, video footage, or even a physical object if it is relevant to your message. We are finding that many audience members are developing a strong dislike for the use of PowerPoint. They see such visual presentation as a way in which you, the presenter, can read everything off the screen. They conclude that you are using PowerPoint to impress them with your ability to make the text fly around while simultaneously making irritating noises. The flood of information is usually too much for your audience to handle. The reality is, not the sugarcoating, but the reality is the average presenters use PowerPoint to make up for the lack of preparation or a lack of confidence. Did you get that? Sure, PowerPoint is a great tool, but understand that you, not the computer program, are the presenter. As I interview audiences, I discover that PowerPoint usually sucks the energy out of them while simultaneously destroying the presenter's spontaneity and conviction. To succeed as a persuader, you must trust in yourself and not hide behind PowerPoint. This great software and technology takes over as the major source of communication and leaves you behind to fight as a second source. You have given the control of your presentation to a machine. Presenters can become robotic, and their true personality is then buried. My rule for presentations of less than 1 hour is don't use PowerPoint. If you do, do not average more than one slide every 2 minutes. Visual aids are effective persuasive tools because they are optically stimulating. Most people are visually oriented. So listen to the following statistics. What do we bring in from our five senses? Sight is 83%, hearing is 10%, smell is 4%, touch is 2%, and taste is 1%. Nothing touches sight. And here's our retention levels according to how the information is received. What we read, 10%, what we hear, 20%, what we see, 30%, what we hear and see, 50%, what we say, 70%, and here it is, what we hear, see, and do, 90% retention level. As you can see, the more senses you can involve, remember the law of involvement, the better. Combining auditory, visual, and kinesthetic modalities will dramatically increase comprehension and retention. As a general rule, the shorter your presentation is, the simpler and fewer your visual aids should be. You need to know, it's just not always what you say, but how you say it. Know the Chinese proverb, quote, words are just words, and without heart they have no meaning, unquote. The words we use and the way we use them can have a huge impact on how we are perceived by our audience. Different words mean different things to different people. In fact, it is hard to find a neutral word. The right words are captivating, the wrong words are devastating. Effective words make things come to life, create energy, and are more persuasive. On the flip side, ineffective words dull and alienate. Numerous studies have shown that speakers who possess greater verbal skills are seen as more credible, competent, and convincing. Speakers who hesitate, use the wrong words, or lack fluency, on the other hand, have less credibility and come across as weak and ineffective. I refer to this skill of knowing the right words and how to use them as verbal packaging. It is often not what you say as much as how you say it. For example, you don't say bill, you say invoice. You don't say salesperson, you say representative. You don't say price, you say investment. You don't say it's expensive, you say top of the line. You don't say it's cheap, you say it's more economical. You don't say what's the problem, you ask what is the challenge. And as persuaders, you don't give a pitch, you give a presentation. Another way in which successful persuaders increase the impact of their message is to use vividly descriptive language. Pretend you're standing in a beautiful sunny kitchen. You reach across the counter and grab a bright, juicy lemon. You could feel it's heavy with sour juice. You could smell the powerful lemon scent as you rub the oil of the skin on your hand. Reaching for a knife, you slice a lemon in half. One of the halves drips bright, sticky lemon juice over your finger. You raise half the lemon to your lips and take a bite. As your teeth sink into the fruit, you feel the juice burst out around your teeth and tongue. The liquid is incredibly sour. You start to cringe, and then you swallow. Did your mouth water? Almost everyone's does. The extraordinary thing is that if I had simply instructed you to produce saliva, it would not have been nearly as effective. One of the reasons vivid descriptions and vivid images are so powerful is because the subconscious mind cannot distinguish between that which is real and that which is vividly imagined. You can use this knowledge to your advantage by helping your audience see, hear, feel, and experience exactly what you are talking about. In the Spanish proverb that says, quote, it's not the same to talk of bulls as to be in the bullring, unquote. A utilities company trying to sell customers on the advantages of home insulation learned to use vivid verbal packaging to enhance its message. It sent auditors to point out to homeowners where the energy was being wasted and to provide them with money-saving, energy-efficient suggestions. In spite of the clear financial benefits over the long term, only 15% of the audited homeowners actually went ahead and paid for the corrections. After seeking advice from two psychologists on how they could better sell the advantages of home insulation, the utility company changed its technique by describing the inefficiencies more vividly. They made it come to life. When they did the next audit, the homeowners were told that those small, minute cracks here and there were collectively equivalent to a gaping hole the size of a basketball. This time, 61% of the homeowners agreed to improvements. Yet another example can be found in the insurance industry. Agents who are able to help their clients have a real understanding of the tragic events that can happen to them sell more policies. When choosing your words, be sure to leave out unfamiliar technical language and jargon that may not be commonly understood. For maximum effect, your message must be easy to understand, memorable, and useful to your audience. So when you craft your message, you need to understand the first 30 seconds with your audience are critical. How do you start? Great persuaders craft and design their message. There's no room to wing it. I don't care how many times you've done it. Your opening is where your audience formulates and settles into their impressions of you. Think of your opening or introduction as comprising no more than 10% of your full presentation. Budgeting your speech in this manner forces you to organize your time so that you know exactly what you're going to say and how you're going to say it. Scrap the old filler such as, today's topic is, or I'm going to speak on, or worse, I was assigned to talk about. When preparing your opener, think of ways in which you can grab your audience's attention and perk up their ears. What do great persuaders do? They use humor or a personal story or pose a thought-provoking question, share a quote, or present a startling fact or statistic. As you move from the opening of your presentation to the main body, it is helpful to remember the acronym TESS. What's TESS stand for? T-E-S-S, Testimony, Example, Statistics, and Stories. Top persuaders tend to incorporate each of these elements into their presentations. Our research shows that when speaking to an audience, each point of TESS will resonate with different audience members. On average, TESS resonates as follows. Testimony with 12% of the audience, examples with 23% of the audience, statistics with 18% of the audience, and stories with 47% of the audience. So let's talk about testimony. A testimony is a person's statement or declaration of what they believe and assert to be true. In your presentation, it can be your own testimony, or it can come from a third party. Testimony or testimonials is a source of social validation. People assume that if others believe in it, then they should too. Great persuaders know how to use testimonials when their credibility is low. Make sure your testimonials are believable and unbiased, and that they are qualified for your audience. Examples are explanations or models that demonstrate or illustrate your points. Instead of just spouting off facts, examples make your points come alive. Examples reinforce your ideas and make them vivid and real in the mind of your audience. Examples can be studies, research, or anecdotes. Metaphors are another great way to more vividly express certain points. As a subset of examples, they are effective because they use pictorial language to connect objects and ideas. On average, we use almost 6 metaphors per minute during spoken language. I know that sounds a lot. But think about some of the common, familiar metaphors you hear all the time. It's how we talk. I struck out. Money burns a hole in his pocket. Keys to the piano persuasion. Emotional bank account. Tree of financial independence. Life is a journey. Seasons of life. Time is a thief. Eyes are the windows to the soul. The bread of life. Love is like an ocean. Your brother is a pig. Like a rock. We hear them everywhere. So after examples, we talk about statistics. In a consumer climate that is increasingly skeptical, I recommend using statistics sparingly. Everyone knows that you can cook the books and find statistics to prove almost anything. Your audience wants credible statistics. Statistics resonate with the logical mind, and when convincing, they are very persuasive. In particular, the analytical minds in your audience will love you and want to know the source. Most statistics need to be explained and often work best with visual aids. The last but not least, and the most powerful element in TESS, is stories. You see, stories draw your audience in while helping them understand and appreciate your message. I'm sure you can think of a time when you were in an audience, not paying much attention to the speaker. You were probably off in your own world when all of a sudden you perked up and started to listen because the speaker started telling a story. When we hear a story, we automatically tune in and want to know what happens next. Great persuaders have mastered storytelling. When you understand what essential storytelling components are and how to use them, you will be able to touch people's hearts. Since you won't always have an opportunity to build rapport and trust with every individual in your audience on a one-on-one basis, stories can answer their questions about who you are and what you represent. Do you want them to view you as funny, honest, or down-to-earth? Identify the main points you want to get across and select your stories accordingly. When an individual's emotions are engaged, he will be more inclined to accept you and your message. The more common ground you can establish with your audience, the more attentive and receptive they will be. Understand, people value their own conclusions more highly than yours, so if you can make your story their story, you will be much more persuasive. As human beings, we are drawn to anything that gives us answers. Use stories to help your audience members answer some of their own questions. When you are successful in doing this, your message will grow and develop in their minds and hearts. If they remember nothing else about your presentation, at the very least, your story and its underlying message will get played over and over again in your listeners' minds. Now, what about your conclusion? Your goal as a persuader is to make your conclusion memorable. Remember, we talked about the opening being 10% of your presentation, your conclusion should only be 5%. Since you've been persuading the entire time, you only need 5% to wrap things up, your call to action. Your conclusion should basically be a clear and concise repackaging of your main points. As you move through your conclusion, get right down to your call to action. Make it short, to the point, and energetic. Think of your conclusion and call to action as the final punch, the thing you want your audience to remember most. Because you spent so much time setting it up, you want the conclusion to be really powerful. So what is the speaking style of great persuaders? Now that you have some pointers for the opening, body, and closing of your presentation, I'd like to give you a few pointers on speaking style. We often overlook these things, but they make a big difference. It is a key to make sure you don't speak too fast. We tend to rush through our presentations, especially when we're nervous. Obviously, if your audience can't understand you, your whole point in talking to them in the first place is defeated. On the other hand, speaking too slowly is not a good idea either. Don't speak so slowly that you seem sluggish. Let the tempo of your speech just be natural, with enough energy that you keep things rolling, but not so fast that you seem jittery or uptight. Another consideration is volume. We've all had the frustrating experience of straining to hear someone. Be sure you project and can be easily heard, especially if you will not have the aid of a microphone. It is also important to consider the impact of pauses and moments of silence. These gaps also add meaning and impact to your message. The sound of a well-timed silence can be more powerful than a dozen words. Because of this technique's dramatic effect, it can be overdone. Don't use pauses or silence too much. If you do, they lose their effectiveness. Besides highlighting important points, pausing also increases comprehension. When you pause in your story, it allows your audience a moment of introspection, which helps them absorb the message, both mentally and emotionally. Whether it is a moment to reflect or to enjoy a good laugh, a lull allows your audience members to process your story on a deeper level. During a presentation, use gestures very carefully. Certainly there is a room for spontaneity, but as a general rule, plan your gestures out ahead of time. They have to fit the story you are telling and not seem awkward or thrown together. Don't overdo it, but do use them to keep your audience's attention, to add drama to your story, and to underscore your key points. Think of your body as a prop that serves as a visual extension of the story you are telling with your voice. Above all else, your gestures must come across very naturally. Don't be robotic in your presentations. Another aspect is expectations. Great persuaders know how to manage expectations. Individuals tend to behave in a manner that is consistent with how others expect them to perform, whether those expectations are positive or negative. When we know someone expects something from us, we usually try to satisfy them in order to gain respect and likability. Expectations are communicated in a variety of ways. It may be through language, voice, inflections, or body language. Think of a time when you'd been introduced to someone. Usually, if that person introduces herself by her first name, then you do the same. Likewise, if she gives you her first and last name, you do as well. Whether you realize it or not, you accept cues from others regarding their expectations, and you act accordingly. We observe the behaviors of others through the lens of our expectations. Our expectations of them are circumstances, and we search for information that confirms and validates those expectations. Have you ever noticed how your expectations become reality in your personal life? Expectation is literally a self-fulfilling prophecy. We become slaves to our expectations on both a conscious and subconscious level. We see this used in the business world all the time. For example, when a car salesman says, "You're really going to love how this car handles in the mountains," he is shifting the focus away from the sale and creating an exciting image in your head. He is also speaking as though you've already agreed to the sale because you wouldn't be driving the vehicle in the mountains unless you are going to buy it. He's acting like it's a done deal. And the truth is, the more he acts this way, the more it is. I love seeing door-to-door salespeople use expectations to their advantage. They approach a door, ring the bell, with a big smile, tell their audience that they have a great presentation that needs to be seen. Of course, they employ this strategy while they are wiping their feet on the prospect's doormat in expectation of being let in the house. You would be surprised by the frequency with which this technique actually works. You see the persuader handing over his pen in expectation of the contract being signed. Have you ever felt bad leaving a store situation where he did not buy something? Why do you think he felt this way? It's because the store created and imposed upon you often through very subtle means, the expectation that you would make a purchase. We also know the element of mystery and suspense is critical in persuasion. Using the elements of mystery and suspense is another way to enhance communication. Great persuaders are able to get their audience members sitting on the edge of their seats wanting more. When we feel as if we've been left hanging, it drives us crazy. We want to know the end of the story. This is also known as the Zygarnik effect, named after Bluma Zygarnik, a Russian psychologist. This effect is the tendency we have to remember uncompleted thoughts, ideas, or tasks more than completed ones. We see the Zygarnik effect in action on the television news and other programs all the time. Right before a commercial break, the newscasters announce some interesting tidbit that will come on later in that hour. This information piques our interest, and rather than flipping the channel, we stay tuned. Movies and dramas on television will also leave you hanging in suspense. By leaving something unresolved right before the commercial break, these programs draw our attention, keep us involved, and motivate us to continue watching. We don't feel satisfaction until we receive finality, closure, or resolution. Now, let's talk about the phone skills. Communication over the phone possesses unique challenges. The first impression over the phone is just as important as it is in a face-to-face contact. But the first inherent challenge is that your audience can't see your face, your body language, or your presence. Everything about you is being judged entirely through the phone. Face-to-face presentations are usually scheduled and planned, while phone conversations are often viewed as interruptions. It is amazing how many companies are going to automated systems when one of the people's top complaints is that they're not getting to a live body. The second most common complaint is that they're getting the runaround by being transferred from person to person. You can always find out if it is a good time to talk simply by asking your audience up front if it is. You are not in a race to finish your agenda. You need to be considerate of your audience's time. Otherwise, you become the uninvited guest who becomes a pest. So what are the biggest complaints your audience has about persuaders contacting them by phone? Well, here we go. The race to finish the script without interruptions. The caller rambles. They are insulted by casual greetings. They do not like the caller's tone of voice. They're hard to understand. They feel rushed. They feel like the caller is only pretending to listen to them. Lack of empathy. They believe they are being treated as though they are stupid. So what do great persuaders do over the phone? They prepare before the call is made. They know the exact purpose and desired end result of the call. They smile during the conversation, even over the phone. They're polite. They use appropriate humor. They use the phrases please, thank you, and you're welcome. They return calls within 24 hours. They always end on a positive note. They're brief and to the point. And they never ask, how are you today? Because it's a telemarketing red flag. They qualify early and often. They're sincere and empathetic. They use questions to control the conversations. And they're really good at leaving messages on voicemail to get people to call them back. A few suggestions for talking over the telephone that we've seen in Great Persuaders. Listen more than you talk. Don't speak too loudly. Hold the mouthpiece about an inch from your mouth. Vary your rate of speech. Don't speak too quickly or too slowly. Let your audience know you are listening. When you say, uh-huh, yes, or really. Do not force your audience to strain to hear. Vary your inflection. Do not speak in monotone. So in conclusion, let's talk about the car example. Not having these skills is like taking an entire road trip with your family without a CD, DVD, or radio in the car. It's like having no air conditioner or heater for the trip. I'm sure you could make it 8 hours without these conveniences, but you would lose your audience within the first hour. Every day you will make either phone calls or live presentations or both, whether to groups of people or to one person. Be careful that you don't spend all your time on the content and none on the delivery. You could have perfect material, but if the delivery is poor, it won't matter. Careful preparation of not just what you say, but how you say it is paramount to making sure you will be persuasive. Keep in mind that your audience will usually remember the delivery more than the content itself. They are judging you first and your information second. Unfortunately, most persuaders have never had the training in communication and presentation skills. If you're one of these individuals, now is the time to master these valuable, timeless, and priceless skills. So let's finish up with a fable, The Donkey in the Lion's Skin. A donkey, having put on the lion's fur, roamed about in the jungle and amused himself by frightening all the other animals he met in his wanderings. Finally, coming upon a fox, he also tried to frighten him. But the fox no sooner heard the sound of the donkey's voice, and then he exclaimed, "I might possibly have been frightened myself if I had not heard your voice." What's the meaning? Outward appearance may temporarily fool your audience, but your words and your presentation will give it away.